Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome and good morning, everyone. This is Lisa Zimmer, and you are listening to Unlimited Realities. Today, we're going to have one of my favorite guests that I've had on before, and she wrote a new book, and it is author Gina Lake, who wrote Trusting Life, and I absolutely loved this book because I found it to be really speaking to me in a personal way. I felt like, you know, I was the cheerleader saying, yay, yes, Gina, right on, all right, all the way through the book. So I really was really empowered, and actually that's what the book really transpired for me, is a tremendous amount of self-empowerment, a tremendous amount of really appreciating where you are and who you are and your skills and gifts. Without further ado, let me introduce our guest today, author Gina Lake, author of Trusting Life. Hello, Gina. Thank you so much for being on our show today.
Hi, Lisa. It's so good to be here, and thank you for your very generous introduction of me.
Oh, please. You are a true gift. There's a resonance that I always find in reading your books that speaks to not only my head, but definitely my heart and my soul, because it's something that oftentimes we find people who are kind of seeking and searching that they kind of lack a little bit of discernment in regard to where they trust or put their energy or even empowerment, because they give power away to so many other people. And what I really liked was that in the beginning of the book, as it started, you started to talk a little bit about astrology, intuitives versus psychics, and things like that. And myself being an intuitive and working with clients on an intuitive and psychological level, it always behooves me a tad when everyone believes that because I'm in a line of metaphysics, I therefore believe every aspect that crosses the path metaphysically, spiritually. And quite frankly, my perception is just the opposite. I see the flake factor that is really prevalent, that is a stream that runs through that. And there isn't as much grounding as I would like to see. I would like to see more grounding integrated within the metaphysics of the spiritual community in the work. And that's what I really was, yay, 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 your cheerleader in this book, because you really addressed it in such a diplomatic and positive light. And let's talk a little bit about that, because you do give credence to astrology, which, you know, I found really fascinating, because I too, you know, trust certain aspects of that medium as well. But I often find that when we go into the intuitive psychic realm, that too many people call themselves, because everyone's intuitive, but too many people call themselves that and really aren't grounded in their own life and themselves to really be offering others advice and insight. And so I really, you know, want to salute you and congratulate you for approaching that subject. Thank you, Gina.
Okay. You know, the intuition, like any talent, is developed, and so it can be at any stage. We all have the capacity to one extent or the other to be intuitive, as being human beings. We all have a capacity to be intuitive. And the only thing that gets in the way of that is the noisy chatter in our mind, really, because that covers over it, blocks it out, because it's so much louder than the subtle intuition that's just often kind of felt in the body, or I feel it like a download of an aha or an information. You have to learn to tune into it because it's on a more subtle level. And if you haven't learned to come out of your mind, detach from your mind and not listen to it, you need to quiet the mind so that you can catch those subtle cues. They're just more subtle than they aren't heard, or even if they are heard, the mind then comes in and distorts them or argues with them or whatever. So developing your intuition and learning to follow it, learning to trust it and to be discriminating is all one of our very big lessons as human beings. And
right,
we're all a different place on the path there. So there's room for it all. There's room for the flakiness. The flakiness is just people learning discrimination, right? And that's how we learn. because I many years ago when I first started channeling, I had to learn discrimination, and I learned the hard way by sometimes mm-hmm. believing bad sources. And
right.
you know, so that taught me pretty quickly what, you know, what was true and what wasn't. That is one way that I learned to discriminate, was by being kind of flaky in the beginning, you know, by making mistakes. So that's, you know, really okay too.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just good for people who go to psychics or who are interested in that to realize that there's a vast, vast spectrum of ability, and that someone who calls themselves an intuitive or an astrologer doesn't necessarily know where they are on that spectrum.
Right.
They may think they're farther along, far more evolved on that spectrum than they actually are before they start giving readings and so on. So that always was kind of an issue for me. And I really, you know, was always tried to be in integrity that way. But, you know, when you're just starting out, you almost can't help but find out the hard way. So it's all
right, good. Right. It is all good. And there is an aspect, though, that I believe, you know, what I really liked about the book is throughout the book, the overall message I really felt I was getting from it was subtle and overt ways of empowering your audience, your reading audience. And, you know, the title, Trusting Life, really sums that up in regard to, you know, really teaching the reader or, you know, empowering the reader to really tune into themselves and to, you know, listen a little bit more to their gut instincts, to their awareness, to what feelings are coming up about a decision or a situation. And you talk a little bit about beliefs as self-fulfilling prophecies. Let's talk a little bit about that, and we'll evolve into throughout the book here, because you talk a little bit about, which really hits home today for me, the home life for a child's development and future success. I'm currently dealing with a decision of whether to homeschool or make my kid buck up and deal with with middle school. But where do we in our belief system really start to see prophecies coming in that are actually self-fulfilling? How do we derive this in our own interpretation?
Well, it's so important to become aware of your beliefs. And there are some beliefs that are unconscious in everyone and some that are conscious. But the more conscious we can become of our beliefs, the more free and empowered we are to choose which ones are helping us and which ones aren't. Unfortunately, most of our beliefs don't help us. And the truth is we don't even need them. We have so many beliefs that are limiting and fearful and self-doubting, and we don't need those at all. And that's one of the main points that I make. It's this lie at the core of our humanity that our mind and the beliefs it holds are somehow trustworthy, true, inviolate.
Mm-hmm.
And the opposite is true. The opposite is true. Our beliefs are conditioning that's been handed down to us. They're part of our egoic structure that creates the false self. And they are primarily limiting. And even when they are not limiting, they don't necessarily apply to this moment. So, you know, to use a belief as some kind of a rule to live by is just not that effective, because we're evolving and changing in the moment, and life is evolving and changing. And so how can we take a belief that we got when we were 3 years old or 12 years old or whatever and apply it to this moment and be so certain that that's going to hold true for now, for who we are now, for how we're living now, for how this world is now?
Right.
So our beliefs need to be examined in the light of what's true in this moment.
Right.
And all of my teaching is about bringing people into this moment, because this moment is the only real place. It's reality. And out of reality, you'll find the truth and the answers that you need. They don't exist in your mind, in
right.
your conditioning, in your programming. The answers for how to live your life don't exist in your thoughts. And this is a radical idea, really, because
right.
we are brought up to think, okay, now I have to think this out and I have to sort this out and I have to make this decision. Well, making a decision is, it's like, just listen to that language, make a decision. Who's making the decision? And how are you making that decision? You know, you're going to make a list of pros and list of cons. Well, those almost always balance out. No wonder people are confused and can't make a decision and change
Good
their
point.
Mind. Because the answers don't lie in that, in the mind, for
right.
what to do, for the choices that you need to make in your life every day. The mind needs to be quieted. And from that place of quiet, an answer may or may not arise, because there's a timing of answers too. There's a timing for clarity to show up, and it isn't,
right.
doesn't always show up when we want it. So we have to give it time to show up. Too many people hurry to make a decision really quick so that they're not so uncomfortable. They think they have to make a decision. The ego feels like it has to know and it has to decide right now, because then it can relax, you know, because it's
right.
feels like then it's in control. But life isn't like that. There's a clarity that flows out of the moment when it's needed and not before. And you have to wait.
And also, you know, in that clarity, it takes a lot of courage and also faith within oneself to have the clarity to kind of step outside of the old paradigms or the old teachings handed down through the families or tradition, because you have a lot of, you know, very stoic religions that, you know, people are tend to walk into because their parents did it and their grandparents went to that same church or their parents, you know, so there's a lot of, you know, breaking that that pattern of really what do you believe? Do you believe, you know, there may be some aspects to the religion base that the individual does believe, but they may also believe in something else, or they may, you know, have more of an alternative or holistic approach to life and things and than their parents did. And I really, the clarity part I find is a really important piece and word that you use, because it really takes courage in oneself and faith in oneself to develop that clarity or to trust that clarity that's coming through, because that seems to be the piece that people struggle with, is that clarity within themselves is fogged, or it's easier to go outside of themselves and seek out advice and input or wisdom than to really trust what it is that's coming to them in that moment of making a choice or going in a certain direction. And you talk a little bit about this clarity, trusting the heart. Would that be a development also that is within the individual, something that they have to learn to trust their heart?
Well, the heart is where clarity comes from.
Right.
And the only thing that confuses that clarity are thoughts. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, so the heart speaks to us in a subtle way, and I used the word intuition before, but you could interchange those words, heart and intuition, because, you know, they are, our heart speaks to us through the intuition. We could also say that the divine speaks to us through our intuition, using our heart. Sometimes we use this word heart because we do feel it in the center of our chest often, a sense of
mm-hmm.
rightness, a sense of truth. That people point to their heart. You know, there's something about this place in the body that seems to be related to our divine self and to how our divine self communicates to us, which is through intuition and through a sense of yes and a sense of joy and a sense of love. You know,
right.
this is the guidance system. The guidance system is do what you love. Do what excites you, what brings you joy, what feels like a big yes, like a big aha. If you always go in that direction, if you let that be the guide for your decisions, you cannot go wrong. It doesn't mean that you won't run into challenges, because life has challenges no matter what you choose, right? It's a mixed bag.
Right.
You know, whatever direction you go in, and the ego doesn't want to hear this, of course, but
mm-hmm.
whatever direction you go in, you're still going to have challenges, because no one's free of that. You know, that's part
right.
of life, built into life. This is a, you know, there's a duality of, you know, we like things and we don't like things about everything. And
right.
this is something the mind just won't accept. The ego doesn't want to accept that somehow it's holding out for this perfect moment, this perfect life, this perfect ongoing forever, ever life where everything is going to be exactly the way it wants. And life isn't like that. That is not reality. And, you know, so coming back into the moment and into your heart and intuition, into your intuition will help you to make choices that create the life that fits for your soul, that is right for you, that will be fulfilling, that will be happy. It won't be problem-free. It won't be suffering-free necessarily, or it won't be, let's say, challenge-free. It could be suffering-free if you consider that suffering is something we generate internally ourselves, which I do. So I don't know if that answered.
Okay,
you
talk a little bit, you know, there's a point here I want to get back to, because, you know, in our suffering, it's our egoic mind that really does create that. And it's that mishmash of not trusting the feelings and the heart and kind of doing, you know, the monkey mind trip on our thoughts and our processing and how we process. And yet, at the same point, there's some validity that can come when we have clarity in the connection between heart and mind, that not all thoughts are egoic. However, when it does go into that monkey mind of confusion and fear and anxiety and all of that, it can be paralyzing. So, you know, there can be that ego at the root of our suffering if we go in that direction. Like you were saying, you can make a choice. There's two states. And, you know, for simplicity, much easier to go tap into, okay, does this feel right or not, than it is to logically weigh, like you were saying, weigh the pros and the cons, make a list, you know, and the list tends to balance itself out, and then we're still confused and left with the same dilemma and problem. So let's talk a little bit about the two states of consciousness, which is both ego identification and also being in the essence. And you have specific ways that you can really, the average person can really identify whether their impulses or their decision making is coming from more of an ego identification rather than the essence of feeling and truth of their whole self and soul. So can we talk a little bit about how we can identify whether it's our ego versus our essence?
Yeah, you know, it's pretty easy to tell which state you're in, because the egoic state, the state which most people live from generally because it's our programming, is a state of contraction, of fear, of doubt, of judgment, of thinking, involvement with thoughts about the past, thoughts about the future, and not being real present in the moment, in the simple moment. And that is not a comfortable place. It's the place mm-hmm. most people live in. It's a place of stress.
Right.
And most people live in this place of stress, of push, 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 and fear and limitation and all of that. And they think that's normal and, you know, accept that, and everyone else around them is largely living in that state of fear and judgment and pushing themselves and wondering and questioning and confusion and all of that. But it doesn't have to be that way. It's possible to drop out of the thoughts that create that state of tension and to move into the present moment, which is a place where you can notice that the thoughts of fear are there, but you're not buying into them. Instead, you're just experiencing this moment as it is, uncluttered by the sort of unreality that the mind creates. You know, the mind, it creates like a virtual reality, and people walk around in their ideas, in a sense, you know, in this cloud of ideas, and they're seeing everything that they're experiencing through this cloud of ideas, through their judgments, through their beliefs about how things should be and shouldn't be, instead of just being in the moment, in life just stripped bare of that, stripped bare of that, life is beautiful. It's simple. It's peaceful. And love naturally flows from that place. And very importantly, one is able to touch into, tap into what the being, the spiritual being that you are, wants out of this moment. How is it moving you? How is it speaking you? What is it drawn to doing? Because the truth is there is the what is living this life is not the ego. The ego is a concept. It's all your ideas about yourself. What's living this life is the spiritual being, the presence that is you. And this presence actually moves your body. It sees through your eyes. It breathes your body, and it gets you up in the morning. You know, your thoughts can get you up, and you say, I have to get up, and then you make yourself get up. But there's also a spontaneous being that naturally takes care of you, that naturally moves you in the world, and everyone experiences that throughout their day, knows what I'm talking about, because you aren't constantly being moved by your thoughts. That would be really exhausting. It's exhausting enough. There's a being here. There's a being. So get to know this being, and the only way to get to know this being is to stop being involved in all of your ideas about me. I'm this way. I like this. I don't like that. You shouldn't do that. You should do this. Life is this way. Life shouldn't be this way. He shouldn't be that way. All of these shoulds and ideas and beliefs about how life is supposed to look all clutter the reality of this very simple, precious, and potentially love-filled and fulfilling moment.
And would you call that being living in more of the conditioned self of the ego versus the unconditional? Because you've got the conditional self seems to have an agenda, and unconditional, it tends to flow. So, okay. So, because you talk a lot about how our fears, you know, can shape our life, and if we're living in that egoic mindset of always looking or projecting or assuming that something, you know, crappy is going to happen, it's going to happen. So it's like, where are your thoughts? Is it more of, you know, taking note and being more mindful of how your thoughts run rampant through your head and how that actually creates a discord or a peace within the physical form and the mind and the simplicity? You know, obviously, your view of life is beautiful because you choose to let beautiful thoughts run through your mind. If you
no, I don't.
Were...
Can I stop you right there?
Sure, go
my
ahead.
My life is beautiful and flows because my egoic mind doesn't have a role in my life. Because I stopped listening to my thoughts, even the beautiful ones. Because I don't need them to feel beautiful, you see. Now there's a place for positive thinking and beautiful thinking and beautiful thoughts to counteract negative ones if you're caught up in them. But there's another place of total freedom where you're just not involved with the chatter in the mind, whether it's positive or negative, because you don't need any of it. And that's the truth. You don't need any of it. You just move in this life without the thoughts about I.
Okay, so how do we get from...
action spontaneously comes out of the moment, and speech spontaneously comes out of the moment. Now, that's a pretty, you know, radical place, and not that many people live from that place, but many people are waking up out of the ego, and that's what this means, are waking up out of belief, out of the ego, out of the egoic mind, and realizing that they don't even need it, that there is essence here, there is the divine here, there is the beautiful spiritual self that you are. It's already here, and it's doing fine living your life. It can do much better without all those thoughts. Now, I'd like to make a distinction between thoughts that you could say essence uses or the ego uses that are functional. You know, the mind is a tool. It can be used by the spiritual being that you are, or it can be used by the false self. Your mind can, you know, your mind can be taken away, carried away by the egoic self, and it can be using your functional mind and creating a life that isn't very happy. Or you can be not in your egoic mind at all, and you can be living as this spiritual being, just flowing with the moment. And if you need to follow a recipe, you use your mind. You pick up that tool of the mind, and you use your mind to read that page of writing. You use your mind to follow that map, to calculate those numbers, to follow directions, and then you put it down. You see, the mind, the functional mind, this wonderful gift that we've been given as human beings, this we need. And this is, you know, it's we can't do without that, can we? But we actually can do without this chattering voice that is all about me. I need
right.
this. I'm this way. I like this. We don't need that at all, you see. And to not listen to that doesn't mean that you won't be able to function. Of course you can just as easily follow a map. You know, this spiritual being that you are, it knows how to get the education it needs to fulfill its life purpose. It knows how to read a map, to use the mind to develop it itself, to accomplish what it came here to do. All I'm talking about is getting out of the way this false self that is created by thoughts about me.
Okay, now in regard to thoughts about the ego, the me, I want, I need, I, you know, I'm feeling, that's one aspect. Now in regard to the egoic mind, I look at it on two different realms, and I may have a different perspective than you do, but my feeling is, yes, there is a need to step outside of the wants, the needs, the egoic mind. But there's also a benefit in regard to using our analytical abilities in deciphering information and making a decision. And I find that, yes, it's great to be on a bliss trip where you're not using your thoughts and your mind or having, you know, positive or negative thoughts. You're just allowing and flowing in that realm. But it is the exception to the rule, and it's rare for the individual who is in corporate America or business or in a job being bombarded with society to really, you know, accept that there's that flow of constant, you know, energy and beauty when they're having to deal with tremendous decisions and analytical concepts throughout their day. So how do we take the average individual who is bombarded with thought processing, with decision making, with the concept of having to really tap in and utilize both the analytical and sometimes egoic voice in business, to just kind of trust and flow? How can we integrate, or how can we increase our ability to accept and flow more? I mean, it is easier for the individual who's living in the wilderness or living out away from cities and towns to really tap into that bliss-filled state of being versus someone who lives in a city or deals with corporate America or business to do it. So, you know, there's the reality and there's the ideal. And how do we get the ideal incorporated more into the reality of stress that exists in our society?
Well, I would argue that those who are most successful in a business situation are in the flow, and then they're using their analytical mind. They use that. Just like I said, the functional mind, the analytical mind, is a tool. It's a tool used by the spiritual being in the flow. And I'm by no means talking about a bliss state when I talk about living from this place of flow and this place of not attending to the chatter in the mind. This is not attending to the chatter in the mind, being in the flow, but still using your analytical mind, using your mind to function in the world.
Okay.
this is the most effective state.
Mm-hmm.
And this is very effective. This doesn't put you in a bliss, disconnected state. It puts you in a very, very effective, very sharp state because you're very attentive to what is needed in the moment and what the situation calls for. You're not cluttering the situation with a lot of confusion and fears and thoughts and doubts and feelings.
Right.
You're just very present to it. And so there's a clarity and a sharpness about this way of living. It's very effective. It's not by any means impractical. However, I must say that you're not creating any stress, because the only thing that creates stress is all the me thoughts. I need this, I need to do this faster, or other people's I thoughts. You need to do this faster, hurry up, right? Other people and their egos. But I also would say that this would be a very different world if everyone lived in the place I'm talking about.
Right.
They wouldn't, corporate life probably wouldn't push to the degree that they also wouldn't be this level of consumerism, and that there would be an entirely different ethos.
Sure,
in our world, and people would make different choices, and that's why it's so important in this day and age for people to return to their hearts and to this place of truth, this place of reality, and move out of this, the ego's push and its fear. It's creating a terrible world, a world full of stress and competition and hatred and judgment that is unpleasant for everyone.
Right, and it is, and I totally, you know, support where you're at in saying and believing all of that. I agree. I do find that some of the most successful, you know, business people are those who both incorporate their intuitive with their analytical. So they use it instinctually. It's not something that they set forth and say, well, I think I'll use my intuition. No, they go upon what feels right, and then they make a decision incorporating the two, not necessarily tapping into the egoic mind of worry and fret and anxiety, but really, you know, a culmination of both. And, you know, unfortunately within corporate America, there is that push and that drive and that, you know, you have to do it faster, you have to do it better, or you're going to lose your job. So, you know, ideally, yes, it would be wonderful, but society isn't and hasn't been set up for that. So how do we take the individual who needs more peace and more calm and more serenity and is dealing with this frustrating paradigm of rush and fret, and to really help them use, can we offer them a tool? Can you provide a tool to the listeners in regard to really dropping down into the heart and the soul of trust and allowing more flow and less rigidity to decision making, so that they can have a tool in this society we've created of you know, kind of a chaotic lifestyle that's brewing with competition, as you were saying?
Well, first of all, you have to make it a priority that you want peace, that you want love, that you want less stress, that you want a lifestyle that supports the spiritual being that you are and mm-hmm. and the spiritual being's goals for this life, for your life purpose. You make that a priority instead of the ego's goal. You can drop out of the rat race. It's your choice. You know, you can drop out of the I need to make more and more money. I need to be more and more and more of this. I need to have more and more power. You can drop out of all of the things the ego drives you to do and check out what is it that really makes your heart sing. And you can create a life that supports what truly is meaningful and what you truly love doing. Everyone has a choice to do that, and here's where trust comes in. People want to do what makes their heart sing, but they don't believe or feel that they can because it won't make them money or whatever. That's where they stop themselves. And that's what this book is about. It's about, you know what? You just stopped yourself, but life didn't stop you. life will support you in doing what makes your heart sing. And you don't know what that's going to look like. So it's scary. And, you know, but it doesn't mean that it won't support you just because you don't know what it's going to look like.
But what about the individual who actually loves working in corporate America? I mean, that is their calling. That is their juice. What about that individual who doesn't want to change their job or drop out of that career choice, but definitely wants to incorporate more peace-filled beingness and acceptance in there? I mean, granted, there's a choice that has to be made, and now once that choice is made, then what can we offer our listeners as a tool to really, you know, keep mindful of that state of being rather than the rat race state of being?
Right. That's a good question. And of course, so if that is important to you, meditation is the most valuable tool for bringing us back to center or to our heart or into reality, into our true self. And a daily practice of meditation, if you do it long enough and regularly enough, you will begin to be able to carry that state of calm and centeredness even in the hustle and bustle of this crazy world. Mm-hmm. And so that's going to make you more effective in your work. It's going to improve your relationships. It's going to be better all around. So that's something that anybody can do because, yes, absolutely, there are some people who are absolutely cut out to do the business and to lead the lives that they're living, but they still need some tools for keeping sane in the in the midst of all of that busyness. So meditation, also taking time out to do what you love, you know, walking in nature, balancing some of that work, because truly it's a little unrealistic to think that a person can work, you know, 16 hours a day and feel at peace and relaxed and not stressed out. That's asking too much.
Right.
You could be enlightened and not be able to do that. You know, there's nobody on this planet who can push themselves and stay centered at the same time. There has to be a certain amount of balance, a certain amount of choosing to take time off, be quiet, meditate, walk in nature, do the things that refresh you, that can keep you balanced. Because,
right,
you know, sometimes people think, you know, they wanna wake up or be spiritual so that they can get all of, you know, go back to their lifestyle that doesn't support that peace and centeredness.
Right.
And really, I do feel that to some extent, you need to create a lifestyle that's going to support your ability to be at peace and stay centered and stay connected to your true self so that you can be effective in what you're doing. And, you know, it's different for different people. But for most people, it is a matter of what things that are universally helpful in keeping people connected are walking in nature, listening to music, beautiful music, seeing things of beauty, looking at beautiful things, meditating, being quiet, being with loved ones, playing with children, playing with dogs, being with animals. All of those things bring us into the moment and bring us back into our heart and into our center. And once we're in there, then we can find out, you know, what's true for us. You know, what's true. Mm-hmm.
And we have, you know, I'm a big believer of using nature for grounding, and even music sometimes that, you know, can take me off into a reflective state just for a different kind of an energy switch, an energy tweaking. And, you know, the fact that we have so many tools at our disposal that we don't have to pay for, that are free, I really believe needs to be encouraged for the individual, because there's so much emphasis right now upon the next best teacher or the next best lecture or the next best, you know, this or that, that there is seeking, and yet the seeking seems, for me, what I see is there's so much of it outside of ourselves that I really want, and I really, that's what I loved about this book, was the empowerment that you provided within the book for the individual, that, you know, all the truth, all the accuracy of insight really does lie within ourselves and our heart and our feelings and our soul, and yet there's a real fear and lack of trust in that, oftentimes kind of carried down through the lineage and often in religions that are taught in regard to what you've been brought up with, some limited or thinking in regard to religions and how the individual really feels and believes their connection to God is. Is God something that is an approachable God? Is it an accepting God? Is it a loving God? Or is it a hell and damnation God? So there's a lot of belief systems here that we're raised with that are never evolved as we grow and age and go through our changes. We just kind of like accept, okay, mom and dad were this and therefore I am too, and yet never challenge our own belief systems. So I would like to get a little bit into how we are stifled in regard to our own conditioning that we've been raised with, belief systems, religions, and views of God, because when there's trust, the name of the book, Trusting Life, when you're trusting life, you're trusting yourself, you're trusting God, you're trusting the flow, that you're getting things as they need to be, you're where you need to be at the right time. You're not pushing things or trying to manipulate things. So how can we look at our belief systems that we have in our life today and tweak them in a way that is more conducive to how we want to live and how we want to express ourselves?
Yes. This book has a lot to do with beliefs, because beliefs are mm-hmm. really important. Because if you have the wrong beliefs, you're not going to trust life. Mm-hmm. And if you don't trust life, you're not going to be happy. You're not going to necessarily fulfill your life purpose. If you trust the wrong things, if you trust beliefs that cause you to be afraid of life, if you trust certain ideas that keep you from following your heart, you're not going to find happiness and follow your heart. So it's very important to examine, well, what am I believing? And because once you do that, then you get to see, well, you know what? I get to choose what I believe. I make the point that, you know, the buck stops with you. Whatever you believe, you're going to suffer the consequences or reap the rewards of.
Mm-hmm.
And so it behooves each person to question, well, what am I believing and do I want those results? You know, and I suggest that if a belief doesn't lead to being a more loving person, and
mm-hmm.
and then perhaps it isn't a worthwhile belief. And
mm-hmm.
I point that out as a guideline, because there are a lot of beliefs that lead to fear, lead to contraction, lead to worry. These are not functional. This isn't functional,
right,
to have a belief that creates tension in us, stress, fear, that causes us to not try to do something. You know, we're afraid, so we don't do something. That's not a functional belief. So we need to question our beliefs. And, you know, if they aren't working for us, then, you know, then let's do away with them. Let's replace them with something that does work, or let's try to move beyond them.
Right.
And so, you know, this is a very critical point in being able to trust life. Many of our beliefs are fears about life, you know, that a fear that it's not going to support us, that life is hard, that we're not good enough, that we can't ever be happy. And many of these beliefs were formed in childhood. If we had a difficult childhood, if we were abused, or if we had parents who were not available to us, who didn't provide us with a positive atmosphere to grow up in, then we're going to feel negative about life. We're going to be afraid of life. And so there's a lot of emotional work that might need to be done to counteract this imprinting, this conditioning that many of us received as children, that life, the world is not a safe place. And it's true
right.
that the world, there are dangers in the world, but we're also given inner resources, wisdom, and other kinds of connections and information that help us overcome our challenges. And that's very important to see, that life provides, it provides, there are challenges, but it also provides the resources and people and information that we need to overcome these challenges and turn them into growth, turn them into something good. It's possible for every challenge that we experience as human beings to be learned from, to be a means of growth for us, which is a good thing. And challenges develop our compassion, our patience, our understanding in ways that nothing else can. So seeing the truth about life and developing a belief system that and a certain metaphysical understanding about life, that life is good. Yes, there are challenges, but it's all evolving us towards love. To have a certain metaphysical belief system that works, that
mm-hmm.
I find that works. So I'm not without beliefs. I have certain beliefs that I carry that work, and all of those beliefs say that love is behind life. To me, that is a belief that is aligned with reality. It's a true belief, so it works. Love is behind life, and the proof of that is that we are all moved by love. We all value love. It's
mm-hmm.
what we ultimately all want. And love is the outcome of all of our growth. There's always a choice of love that can come from any challenge that we're having. We can all find a way towards love. And many of our challenges are meant to teach us to love in an odd way.
Right. And you talk about trusting the path of life and trusting life and what guides our life. And, you know, there's so many signs and influences that we're all experience in our days. And some of them are people. Some of them are interactions. We have a choice of how we're going to respond or interact back. We have a choice of how we perceive things. You know, it really comes down to individual choice on whether we really want to create more chaos because of the mind and the thinking and the lack and the fear, or if we want to really create more inner harmony and peace through seeing more of the lesson and the love and the learning out of the same circumstance. And so, I'm a big believer in the way you look at things is the way it transpires around you, and it always transpires to give you the greatest amount of learning from that lesson. And yet, at the same point, if we're not really staying in a state of presence, if we're kind of like living in our past and our fears and our issues, or we're projecting towards the future, we're really not being present, and we're not being, you know, developed in that essence of learning and growth and acceptance and allowing ourselves to kind of evolve through the circumstance instead of, you know, jumping on, you know, a negative approach or a negative, aspect or perspective of a situation. So how can we develop more trust in ourselves? Well, you have this here as being more living in the present, but can we offer some guidelines for our listeners in regard to how to be mindful of the present, how to bring our mind back when we're playing with it in that monkey mind realm of, you know, projections or assumptions or the past or fear? You know, is it as simple as, you know, catching our thoughts? Is it as
mm-hmm.
simple as stopping our thoughts? And are there tools that we can provide in doing that? I know meditation, yes, very, very important, and we did touch on that a lot. Is there anything else we can offer our listeners to help them to kind of, you know, get on the track of more peace and less stress?
Well, becoming aware of your thoughts is extremely important, because once you become more and more aware of your thoughts, you begin to see what a lot of garbage there is in there. You know, you can bring this evaluative, analytical mind that you have, this wonderful evaluative mind that we've been given. You bring this aspect of the mind to what you're calling the monkey mind. That's a great term that I think Buddhists use also. You bring the evaluative mind to this monkey mind, to all these I thoughts, and you begin to examine them. You say, what is that? Is that helpful? Is that useful? Is that, you know, how does that make me feel when I think that thought? And if it doesn't help you to function and be more loving and open and happy and peaceful in life, then maybe you don't need it. See, the ego's held in place by this underlying belief that if you don't listen to the mind, the egoic mind, you are going to be in trouble. That's how it's held in place. There is a fear, a deep-seated programmed fear, that listening to the mind, if we don't listen to the mind, we won't be safe, and if we listen to the mind, we will be safe. That's, you know, the belief is you have to listen to the mind to be safe. And that's the lie. That's the lie. It's upside down and backwards. And that's
right.
It's so crazy. It's so crazy. When you begin to observe your mind, you can see that what the mind is spitting out is very negative. It's full of fear. Fear, you know, fear, if fear arises in the moment as you reach to touch the stove, the hot stove, that's functional, you know, but if fear is arising because you're thinking about some future possibility, that's not functional. That isn't functional fear. And so this is one of the points that I make, and I'm hoping that people come to see that most people's fears are dysfunctional. We don't need them. We don't need those ideas of some fearful future to keep us safe. They don't keep us safe.
And it's perpetuated. I mean, we have so much thrown at us through media and society and anxiety and economy that really perpetuates that fear. And so someone has to say stop, and if we don't say it for ourselves, who's going to say it for us? So there is a real important responsibility we all have to take for ourselves in understanding what feeds us and what takes from us. And if it's not really providing nurturing, happy or fulfilling life purpose thoughts, then it's really, you know, something that can be thrown out on some level, or at least looked at and say, isn't that interesting? I have that thought now. Let's excavate. So, we're at a point, you know, we're at a crossroad here. So it's real important, self-responsibility, self-awareness. You know, it's not scary to dig. It's important to dig. We have to dig. We have to figure out what makes us tick, because what's important to me may not be what's important to you, and that's okay. But it's, you know, it's personal responsibility and it's integrity to ourselves on what's important for us. And that's
and so you can't get beyond fears unless you really take a look square on at the mind and see how really false the fears are that it creates, and how useless they are. If you keep believing those fears, you'll never trust life. So, I spend a lot of time talking about fear in the book because if you are going to continue to buy into your mind's fears about its beliefs and fears, you won't be able to move into this place of flow and alignment with essence, where you will discover that life is trustworthy. See, you know, it's a catch-22, because you have to overcome fear to some extent before you can discover that the ego's reality, that this is a horrible, dangerous life and you won't survive unless you listen to me, you won't discover that that's false unless you take a step back and decide to try it out and see.
Right.
You know, and so it can be a difficult process for people to disengage from the beliefs that they've been believing, that have been creating their negative reality. But it's really possible to do that work, and you might as well do that work because it doesn't lead to anything good. So it doesn't lead to happiness. I'm kind of a happiness teacher, you know? And it's not about the woo-hoo happiness, you know? It's about the deeper happiness. It's if you want the happiness that comes from fulfilling your soul's life purpose, from being in alignment with what's really true for you, and what's going to be true for you is going to be good for the whole. It's going to be good for all of humanity. It's going to be a place of love and giving and service and creation and sharing and beauty. It's not going to be a place of fear and contraction and limitation.
And oftentimes when you're in the flow of really connecting with soul purpose and divinity and your truth, isn't it true too that things tend to flow more easily, like they come together more easily? You're not kind of like, you know, chasing your tail, and it just flows. And oftentimes there's other times when you're on a path and you're met with, you know, some challenging situations, that if you can change your perspective and look at it as an opportunity to kind of tweak it a little bit instead of looking at it as an obstacle, doesn't that too change the vibration of how you work with your opportunities and your situation as well? Because whole happiness comes from perspective. You know, it really comes from how we're looking at things. If we're looking at things constantly with this, then it's going to be like that. And, you know, and the wonderful way you've nurtured the reader in your book is really entrusting the reader that you've got all the tools and the power, that it's up to you, and here you go. It's just a matter of where are you in the process, because we're all at different levels in process of growth and change. And to really honor that is self-love and self-awareness, and to know the steps.
And can I just say one more thing?
Of course.
In that this place of flow is a very attractive place. When you're in the flow, you're in a place of peace and a place where you're just loving life and loving other people. And this is the most attractive place. And other people want to help you. They want to support you, and you're able to see opportunities that exist in the environment that you might not see if you're all wrapped up in fears and worries and thoughts and what am I going to do and I have to hurry and blah, 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 blah. It's just, you know, that is not an attractive place. Fear is a very unattractive place. And so I think, you know, it in case you think that this place of trusting life is some kind of airy-fairy, you know, place. No, it's a place that is very effective, very attractive to everything that you need to support yourself, to information, to people, to support. Everything that you need comes from this place of you being in the flow, of you not listening to your fears, of you being in alignment with the spiritual being that you are. Everything goes much better. Yes.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. And amen to that, because it is a matter of, you know, sometimes we can't get out of our own way. And that, of course, is the egoic mind of limitation and fear. And I really, you know, I just absolutely love your book, and I want to bring everyone's attention to your website, which is www.radicalhappiness.com. Gina Lake is the author we were talking to today. Her book is Trusting Life. It just came out on Amazon. It's a wonderful, wonderful book that's really very self-empowering as well as validating to who you are and your truth. And Gina, I really want to thank you so much for being with us today. You're always such a wonderful, wonderful interview guest to have, and I just truly value your your journey and your wisdom and your insight here. So thank you, and God bless for all that you do for everyone.
Oh, thank you so much, Lisa. It was so enjoyable speaking with you again. You take care.
Oh, thank you. You too. God bless everybody. We'll be back next week on Unlimited Realities at 11:30 a.m. Eastern Time. God bless and have a great week, everyone. Take care. Bye-bye. Bye, Gina. Thank you so much.
Oh, yeah. Thanks so much. It was really fun.
That was a great show. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
Yeah. Okay, bye.
successes, you know, you're able to get the success of the funding. And it seems like he's coming from a place of asking a lot of questions. You're coming from a lot of information, so it's very clear for him. But that also seems to pave a way for him to know where to direct you. So the clearer, like, if, you know, read him when you're explaining it. If there's, you know, a lot of, you know, that means he doesn't have it completely, you know. So you're going to have to give more description. You know, if he's asking questions, he's got enough of the concept to ask questions. So run with that. And he's also a lightning speed brain. So there's a lot of, like, the right and the left are going at the same time. So he's got a lot of, while he's talking to you, he's also trying to figure out, I see him, I see how, it's like he's trying to figure out how does this compute? And where can I direct them? What can I do here? But, right. He does.